Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, everybody. What is up? Chad Wesley Smith here. Another episode of the Jug Life Podcast coming to you from Max Ada's living room in Oakland, California. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well.
You've just been jet-setting, traveling the world, coaching weightlifting in all sorts of fine locations.
That is true, yes. been to some of the finest countries this planet has ever seen.
And some this planet has never even seen. No one else has been there, apparently.
Absolutely.
So Max just got back from Ashgabat, Turkmenistan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're just coaching Team Juggernaut athlete Alyssa Ritchie at the IWF World Championships. But before that, you guys were in Germany a little bit. Tell us about that Team USA camp over there in Germany.
Yeah, so one of the things that that's kind of new and something that USAW is trying is to do what we call acclimation. So they're going to try and bring the team, the world championship team, to the location before they compete. Most teams are showing up to Worlds, you know, a week beforehand so they can get accustomed to the time zone and the training and all this. Team USA wanted to do that, but rather than spend a whole week in sunny Ashgabat, Turkmenistan, we kind of split the travel up in half and went to Lehman, Germany, where the National Training Center is, for a week. And Team USA, all the lifters and some of the coaches went and did a little week-long training camp. Everybody kind of showed up at a little bit different times, but for the most part, I think everyone was there for the duration. Did our final week. Most people had their final week of heavy training. Then about a week before Worlds, we all showed up in Turkmenistan.
And you know, looking at, well, we speak specifically about Alyssa's training, but you know, as a lifter goes into the last week of preparation for a big competition, and this, you know, World Championships is the first in a labyrinth of meets to qualify for the 2020 Olympics, and we'll get a little bit more into that process as much as we can, as much as we can understand about it in a bit. But, you know, for the biggest competition of most of the athletes' careers up to this point, what are some good things to do, or maybe some not so good things to do that last week of training?
Yeah, I think this is one of those, this is a scenario, you know, you have to think about it. And we actually just did a podcast, remember, on peaking, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the real, you have to really excel at that component of training when you're going into these kind of meets. So I think some of the really big things that are super important, because of the, I want to say, precarious nature of qualifying and you know, Roby points, one lift can separate you from being on a team or not being on a team. You can lose a lot of points here and there by being successful. So going into the competition, you basically have to be excellent. You can't miss, especially in training. You see a lot of lifters, you know, not saying anyone in particular, but if you see a lot of lifters missing lifts in training those last couple of weeks.
But you're not saying anyone.
Yeah,
in particular.
not saying anyone in particular, but you know, lots of misses.
You know who you are.
Lots of misses in the gym generally equals lots of misses on the platform. So, you know, the two biggest things for me going into this with Alyssa were, one, no misses, really focusing on eliminating misses. And in doing that, we build a lot of confidence for the weights we're going to take. And then two, making sure that the adaptive process and that the process of decaying fatigue and those things, the physiological things, are on track. So, you know, if she's recovering, you know, at the right rate, if we're tapering training volume the right way, those kind of things. So it's really just a matter of kind of guiding Alyssa into the competition in great shape with tons of confidence and securing the, you know, the technical skills so that she's not going in with a bunch of misses or kind of unsure situations.
Or trying to make changes.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, but you get to be a week out from competition. Basically, you've got what you've got.
Yeah. It's like we had to call one audible on a workout where it was more of just a time change because we were traveling on Monday. And normally we would have done this heavy training session, her last kind of heaviest training session, the day before or the day after. But we decided, let's do it right before we fly. So we actually showed up on a Monday morning really early. And because of that, I knew, hey, she's kind of off in the morning this early. No one's going to feel good. We dialed the numbers back a little bit and had a really good training session. Whereas if I'd have just stuck to the plan, it could have been a lot worse, or could have just been like really uncomfortable and not a confidence inspiring kind of session. So small changes like that are fine, but for the most part, nothing was done that wasn't really planned.
And you guys were training somewhat alongside the German team, particularly, I guess, with Max Lang as their real standout lifter. His parents did name him after you, so yeah. I'm sure you guys had a special bond. But did you see anything, particularly interesting or noteworthy with their training?
Yeah, so I'm always really keen to try and observe a lot of stuff when I'm around other coaches and especially around people that, have had a track record of success. The thing I notice about the Germans is that they videoed and analyzed every single training session. So they had this it was like 1980s looking computer setup. Like this guy's like in a desk and the computer's like built into the desk and they had like video cameras on each lifter and they would do a lift and then it would play again on like a TV that was overhead. But they had some kind of like sports weightlifting analysis software that would track the bar and the speed and all this. So they were putting a lot of attention and energy into that. And they even said that they use that to predict, based on the way the lift is going, the speed of the lift, and some other things, they use that to predict opening attempts, second and third lifts, and what they think the lifter is capable of. Probably not, from a real, 30,000-foot view, it's probably not any better than a coach. But I think it's an interesting process that they put effort into the idea of tracking things. And so they could look historically at Max Lang's lifts and say, hey, the last five lifts that you were lifting at, this velocity and this was happening, you had PRs, but now you're way below that. So maybe we are more conservative. And then outside of that stuff, the technical stuff, their lifters, they performed a lot of the exercises they performed, like the strength exercises. They did quite a bit of them, and I talked a little bit with some of the lifters, and they were saying that, they do quite a bit of like heavy squatting, heavy push pressing and stuff, and you saw it. Max Lang did like a PR 170 push press, and it was really smooth. And for an 80, I think he's an 81 kilo lifter, like that's very solid. I don't know how much that really, he may be a really good push presser, this and that, but it was interesting to see. And it was kind of, his PR before that was 165, and he kind of came out into our area and did it in front of everybody, kind of like, got kind of hyped up. And so that was cool to see. It was interesting to see how much more that they did.
It was good though, then after that, that Captain America, Harrison Morris, went on to defeat both German lifters, Nico Müller, right behind him. And then Max Lang in 12th. So
yeah, well, freedom.
Yeah, notch another one for the good old Uncle Sam.
There was a lot of tension. I felt the tension still from what had happened in the 40s, and but that may have been just me. Could easily have been just me. they did. I will say what was funny was at some point, I want to say Mike Gattone maybe asked about someone had really weak legs and said, well, what are you going to do to fix that? And this is where I kind of lost. I don't know exactly what happened, but one of the coaches said, have you heard of German volume training? And he was absolutely serious that they were going to do.
Well, they're not known for their sense of humor.
Yeah. And I was,
it might have just been very dry.
The driest joke ever. I was surprised to hear that they were going to have somebody do 10 sets of 10 squats at who knows what low percentage, but
then later the German coaches were sitting at dinner and did you hear what they told the stupid American?
It could easily have been that, yeah. It could certainly have.
So then you guys went from Germany over to Turkmenistan. Mm-hmm. I recall before you went saying that it is the hardest country to get into.
Yeah.
Even more so than North Korea.
That's what I'd heard from a few people, said it was just really difficult to get a visa, a tourist visa to go. Something like 5,000 visas a year is all they hand out.
What was the cavity search like on the way in?
If I went again, I would do things different. But I think everyone was kind of really nervous that like, oh, you can't bring in any kind of supplements or food or any, like you have to be like, we're going to get there and it's going to be like guards pushing us around with like, you know, automatic weapons. And so I'm like, all right. But when we got there, it is so different than that. The airport, when we landed, we go into the airport is beautiful. Like the ceiling of the airport, like it looks like a casino in Las Vegas. Like
it's like all marble.
Yeah, right? everything is marble. If someone had to say sum up Turkmenistan in one word, I would say marble, white marble. Every building is white marble. The sidewalks are like granite. It's immaculate, clean. There's like people sweeping the sidewalks everywhere. Granted, we were in like the Olympic Village. You know, which surprisingly has a lot of Olympic rings all over it.
The Olympic Village for the Olympics that they've never had.
Yeah.
And will probably never have.
They're planning on getting it in 2032. So.
Really planning ahead.
Yeah. Well, they built this thing like 5 years ago, I guess.
White marble is going to be so out of style then?
I was saying it would only be fitting if the medals were made out of marble. You got like a white marble slab if you won Clean and Jerk. Yeah, it was interesting. Definitely getting there was... you know, bizarre. Like you flew in at like 3 a.m. in the morning, 4 in the morning, and then left at 4 in the morning. And I don't know if that's just that no airlines have flights in there. You know, it's not like a destination. So They're just like, you know, take the shitty one.
You had a pretty apt description. We'll have to put some of these pictures up on Instagram or something. A pretty apt description of the area.
There were so many times we tried to sum up what it's like. The Hunger Games was one description. I would say it was kind of like a slightly Middle Eastern Star Wars Disneyland.
Yeah, like Tomorrowland.
Tomorrowland, like exhibit at Disneyland the day before opening day.
Because there's no one around.
There's no human beings there. There's no human beings
except
there.
The street sweepers.
Yeah, the street sweepers.
And the guards for the street sweepers.
And the security guy watching the street sweeper. and the whole thing is like there's no humans anywhere. No people, no cars. They had these huge freeways and streets, no cars.
Monorails.
They had a monorail but didn't run till like halfway through the week, till after Alyssa left it. But then about halfway through the week, you know, we're walking around, you know, having... The breakfast they would serve would be like, you know, cornflakes and warm milk. And then they ran out of cornflakes, so they just were like, well, you get warm milk now. And we're thinking the whole time.
As a competitor, did you guys get free tokens for the monorail? Or?
I was expecting at one... I would not have been surprised to see like an animatronic person like or an animatronic scene somewhere and be like, oh, yeah, no, that makes sense. Like, these are better than real people. Yeah. Very interesting place for sure.
So moving on to the actual competition, we'll start off with Team USA's performance. And and first up for Team USA, the littlest juggernaut, Alyssa Ritchie in the 49 kilo class. So coach, recap your athlete's day for us.
Yeah, so Alyssa showed up and we, you know, I knew going overseas and the food quality and this and that was going to be something we had to monitor. So, you know, prior to her weighing in, I was making sure that she kept her weight as high as possible. You know, she moved up a weight class. She got to move up a kilo. But that weight cut is a little bit different going from, you know, 51 to, you know, 48 or 50 to 48 going from, you know, another kilo up to 49. So we, you know, I was adamant about her eating more food so she stayed, you know, at the right body weight. Made the cut. We got down there and the scale was a little bit, she wasn't expecting it. Maybe it was like a little bit heavier, but all her weight basically came off at the last hour or two. She lost almost a kilo, like 0.8 in the last like 3 or 4 hours before weigh-ins, which is actually perfect. You know, yeah. it's a more, you know, tense situation. You're a little bit nervous, but it's exactly what you want. So made weight, was in good spirits. We go in, warm-ups were, you know, I was unsure. So the plan was we're going to be really conservative because this is an important meet and she has to make a Roby score, has to make a total, you know, and so that's obviously priority number one. We can't have any mistakes there because you need to be ahead of anyone else in that weight class. She goes in. Warm-ups are looking amazing. Was really, really strong. Just, you know, Demos and I looked at each other. It's like, she hasn't looked this strong in warm-ups at any international meet, which is really positive. But again, you know, it's like you have to be, you kind of got to pick your strategy. Once you pick your plan, just because you look great, you don't want to change it because then, you know, you could easily end up in a position where you trick yourself into thinking you're a little better than you are. So we stayed at 74, easy opener. 77 was stronger, even better. Took 80 and just overpulled it a little bit and ended up swinging it behind. Had we opened a little heavier and in hindsight, you know, she had taken 81 or 82, I'm sure she would have made it because it would have been a little bit less behind on the pull. But super good performance there. Then same thing in the clean and jerks. The goal was to try and just get as high as we could, get some Roby points. The goal is to try and get top eight. After the snatch, that would be a little bit harder. So we just focused on let's put together three great lifts. After AO3, where she kind of, you know, had a little bit of an issue with her total there and making clean and jerks, we just played it safe, went 96, 99, 101. Each one got better and stronger. The 101 was the best I've seen her at 100 or more in a meet.
Yeah, and you know, I was kind of follow along on the live stream and the USAW Instagram feed, but I was in on the East Coast at the time. Oh, yeah. So it was, you know, 5:30 in the morning or something.
Yeah,
and we were on the way to airport and seeing the lifts as they popped up on the IG story for USAW, and I saw the opener and I was like, man, that was like a rough looking opener. And yeah. Alyssa's got this issue like of standing up the cleans and it being so much tied to like how she catches it, if it's in the right position. And you could tell that first one, she didn't catch it in the right spot and they looked like the ones at AO3.
Yeah.
And
yeah, she like landed on her toes and you know, the we had a big discussion afterward and this is a lot of where process comes into play. It's like she has plenty of physical strength to clean and jerk 105 or more. And
she's jerked 115 from the blocks.
She's plenty capable of those big numbers. It's not a matter of her needing to change a lot physically. She doesn't need to get way, way stronger to make a bigger total. But the thing that stops somebody in that situation from hitting the absolute best they can on the platform is really, it comes down to the details. It comes down to consistency. You know, when you do every single rep the same, you know, you're going to look like, you know, it's going to inspire the coaches to say, yeah, let's go up. When each one's a little different, even though they're getting better as she goes, it's tough to say, okay, like let's jump up a lot more here, especially when a lot of points are on the line. I've learned as a coach, I think the most important thing is that you come up with a plan, and you come up with your options, your contingency plans, and you stick to it. It's too easy to get stuck in the position where you're going to wing it on the day of the meet, and well, we'll open here and see what we can do. You know, it's like opening your, you know, you're going to open at some huge number and then take the world record on your second. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, what's like, why don't you do the world record on a third and just backtrack from there? So it's easy. But you know, so in her case, we stuck to that plan. It was good. I'm happy. She's happy. We did a great job of executing exactly what we thought we needed to do. And then, you know, to be fair, it's a good way to build confidence after a meet that wasn't the best. to come back and build a lot of confidence with successes is all you can ask for, and it's really put her in a good spot.
Yeah, so Alyssa ended up making 77-101, 5 for 6 day, 12th place there at the Worlds. Pretty tight grouping. I mean, from her in 12th at 178 up to 8th was 183, so it was, you know, 5 spots, it was 5 kilo difference. And a couple really outstanding performances in the 49-kilo women. I'd say it was 49s and 76s seem to be the really standout classes for the women at this event. A name that I'm not going to try and pronounce from Thailand did 89-120.
On her second clean and jerk.
Yeah, for the win. 120-kilo clean and jerk for a 49-kilo woman. So it was Thailand, then China, Thailand, all four of those ladies over 200 kilos.
Yeah.
And then a 13-kilo drop-off from fourth to fifth. So there's just four really outstanding lifters there, and we'll talk a bit more about the implications of that are for Olympic qualifying for Alyssa in a bit. So looking at
hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. With results like that, it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive address, ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife. That's ZipRecruiter.com/JugGLife. ZipRecruiter.com/JugLife.
Of Team USA, I'm just going to run through this list of historic moments posted by USAW CEO Phil Andrews. Team USA won back-to-back medals in a Worlds for the first time since 1999, hit a higher percentage of made lifts than they had at any other previous World Championships. Matty Rogers became the first athlete to win back-to-back medals since 1994, and she took bronze in the
clean and jerk. Yeah.
CJ Cummings and Harrison Morris both set junior world records in the clean and jerk. Harrison maybe, or CJ... Actually, was his in the snatch?
It might have been, huh?
I think it was. And Harrison was going back and forth with another junior lifter from China, so he didn't end up with the junior world record, but did set it in the process. And he's also 2 years younger than the Chinese junior. He's his first year as a junior being 18 years old, but the Chinese guy is 20.
Yeah.
Sarah Robles broke Pan Am records, I think, across the board.
Yeah.
Just another phenomenally consistent performance from her, 6 for 6, American record in the clean and jerk. So congrats to Sarah and her coach, our friend Tim Swords. Harrison Morris, 4th in the clean and jerk, which is the highest in an Olympic qualifying Worlds for a male, U.S. male. Wes Kitts, 2:22. Clean and jerk PR for him, the lightest American to ever make that weight. Meredith Alwine, Harrison, Matty Rogers, Robles, and Jenny Arthur all finished top 8. Jordan De La Cruz, Alwine, Morris, and CJ all increased their records. Jordan De La Cruz, if you have not been watching Jordan De La Cruz lift weights these last several meets, she's doing phenomenally.
Yeah. I mean, She's a great example of, like, every lift is just robotic. It's the same. Her demeanor is the same. It's just fantastic. She really is just owning that class. There's no one that's going to take that from her, because if she improves even marginally at this point, she's stomping the whole rest of the field, you know. And she's awesome.
Yeah. So congrats to... She doesn't like to be called JoJo, so I call her that anyways. But to old JoJo De La Cruz and her coach, Spencer Arnold. Jason Bonick, oldest man to make his first Worlds appearance for Team USA. I think he's 37.
Yeah. Jason Bonick, I will tell you this right now. At any one point in time in the training hall, Jason Bonick is the strongest man in there. Guaranteed. Even if every other country is there, he's the strongest guy. Maybe not the best weightlifter, but the guy is just a beast. Like, I mean, he is training like 3 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
Just tough as nails and super solid guy.
And very strong lifting for Kane Wilkes, best he's lifted in a couple of years, with 180-220, becoming the first man since 2007, first U.S. man since 2007 to total 400 kilos at Worlds.
Yep.
So congrats to Team USA, all the personal coaches, Dimas, Gatone, Phil, for... Yeah, very successful Worlds for the U.S. team.
Yep.
Moving on to some other notable things of the event, both in actual weightlifting performance and weightlifting politics, the other favorite topic of our show. Yeah, I think you saw a real return to earth for Russia. So just running through the Russian placing here on the men's side. 15th, 11th, 17th, 22nd, 1st, 18th, 9th, 7th, and 5th. And then on the women's side, 13th, 17th, 14th, bomb out, 9th, 16th, 4th, 6th, 8th, 1st. So yes, two world champions, and that's excellent. But actually looking at those performances for... Artem Okulov, the 89-kilo champ, he did 20 kilos less than he did in 2015 as an 85.
Yeah.
And
he looked it, too. He looked, the 66 was tough, and yeah.
And then Tatiana Kasharina, regarded by many to be the best female weightlifter of all time, did win another world championship in now the plus 87-kilo category. With 145, 185. Tremendously strong.
Yeah.
But she had previously done 151,
193. Yeah.
And if you've seen her 193 clean and jerk from, I think, 2015 Worlds, she basically did a power clean.
Yeah, much easier.
Yeah, and this it was not the same look. So
it's interesting. What I think the question really is, has Russia... what is Russia's plan, right? Because this is not – Russia's not happy with that, I'm sure. And are they going to try and are they going to come back in full force in a new way, a different way? Maybe this is something that forces them to be creative and intelligent and find new ways to train. Or, are we just going to see, in a few years they ruin the party for everybody and start getting guys popped left and right?
Yeah.
So –
if we can't be good at weightlifting, then nobody gets to do weightlifting.
This is why we can't have nice things, Russia.
Yeah. You saw a lot of the same from Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
They only had two finishers in the top 10 on the men's side. I didn't go through their women's team stats real quick, but they had it on the women's side, 5th, 11th, 7th, 8th, 3rd, 10th. 12th, 9th, so a little 17th and 19th.
Yeah.
A little bit better finish for their women relative to their men, I think. But, there's no secret here. We're not telling a secret when we say that Russia and Kazakhstan had athletes whose success was highly dependent upon pharmaceuticals. And
they don't call them Soviet sports supplements for nothing.
Yeah, and they don't get to use them anymore, and it showed a lot in their performance. And is everyone at the Worlds clean? Of course not. And hopefully there's not too many positives that come out of it, because otherwise we don't get to have weightlifting anymore. But it's changes are afoot. Now China, who also had a ton of retroactive positives from the last few Olympics, they didn't lift as well, not quite as dominant, but still pretty outstanding performances. A lot of champions, a lot of podium finishes for them. Their women's team was pretty much as dominant as ever.
Yeah. It's interesting because you look at the one thing that kind of also is thrown in there is the weight class changes. Mm. So you might have some lifters that are going up a body weight class, like Akolov's a great example. You know, his numbers were far from their best, but they weren't dismal. They were enough to win the worlds, but he's 4 kilos heavier than he was, lifting less than he was.
Yeah, you know, 20 kilos less.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a significant change there, but it's not enough. You know, it's like the perfect storm enough to where he could still win. Some of the other classes, maybe if people were in different, you know, maybe went up or down, you know, without the drugs, it probably changes things.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't go back and look through all these past world's results, but this, yeah. I can't imagine a time where Russia was having guys finish 22nd in a weight class outside of, you know, the occasion that someone went two for six right. And then,
yeah, well, across the board, right? They're bringing a team that's literally no better than any other team there.
Yeah.
You know,
so yeah. Also in doping related news, host country Turkmenistan was ineligible to compete, and then the IWF made some special vote. A guy clean and jerked a golden barbell, and
not a guy, the president.
The president of Turkmenistan.
He's the president of Turkmenistan.
Other sporting federation?
Or no, of the country.
The whole thing.
Yeah, he performed a clean and jerk with a golden barbell. And it's the heaviest clean and jerk ever done in existence, as long as you're in Turkmenistan. To the applause, to the raucous applause of his cabinet, or I don't know exactly what they are, but and that he then declared a state in which Turkmenistan can live. I feel like the president of Turkmenistan is kind of like the Michael Scott of dictators, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so basically Turkmenistan was ineligible to compete because of doping violations.
Yeah.
And then the IWF just said, like, oh, well, they're being nice and hosting us in their...
We're in their house.
Yeah, in their white marble Tomorrowland. So we'll let them lift anyways, even though they're not ineligible.
Well, there was one more
because they're ineligible. Yeah.
Weirder story was the 45 kilo lady. She came out and so much is weird about this. She came out and did 10. She had 104 on her second attempt, and there was a Thai girl with 104 on her first. The Turkmen girl took 104, made the lift, but it was, you know, out of order. In addition to that, her knees were not locked out when she stood up. And I don't remember the exact situations. I know Jim Schmitz posted it. I'm sure other people have posted this. But essentially, the lift was taken away for whatever reason. It was red lights, but then taken away because it was her second attempt. It wasn't the right order.
Oh, yeah.
Took 105 and missed it. But then they left 104 kilos up as the new record, the new... maybe new world record or junior world record, and then got credit for it at some point in time. Very, very strange circumstances. Very odd.
Some home cooking in Turkmenistan was definitely afoot. And as Max can attest from the breakfasts of cereals and warm milk and then just warm milk, home cooking in Turkmenistan sucks. Yeah, you know, IWF, don't do things like allow ineligible countries to compete just because they're hosting you. That's how you get kicked out of the Olympics. Other exciting parts, the 81 kilo men for Lu Jiajun, Mohammed Isef, and Dai Yin Li. That was a great competition. Yeah, just super tight battle there. Yusef with the world record in the snatch, with the new standard. And 374 for Lou, 373 for for ESEF and 372 for Lee. Yeah, that's the stuff that's really fun to watch. And you get multiple guys battling a close competition in that same session. Harrison Morris lifting so phenomenally, 157-200. Yeah, it, don't take for granted. American weightlifting fans, I know it's easy maybe to think that with CJ and Harrison making all these huge lifts and you've gotten to see them for the last several years, don't take for granted what they're doing. Like 200 kilo clean and jerk for an 18-year-old kid who weighs 176 pounds.
Yeah.
178 pounds.
It's amazing. I mean, Harrison is right there with those guys. That's what I think, you know, he's a kid still. He's 18 years old. I mean, the guy is, he is going to be, you know, assuming that everything continues for the positive and he does well, and I'm sure he will, and his coach is a great coach. Like, he's right there, you know, a few more kilos and, you know, a little bit more tight doping control, and he's knocking on gold medals.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, four kilos out of gold in the clean and jerk, you know, so congrats to them. So that was an exciting session. Sarab Marathi versus Tian Tao,
yeah,
in the 96 kilo group. I think, pretty much everyone thought that Marathi was going to dominate it, and he did win by 9 kilos with new world records across the board, 186-230 for a 416 total. But, you know, with Tiao moving up from 85s, it was kind of some questions of like how much better would he be, and he definitely seems like he can challenge Marathi.
Mm-hmm.
His 236 clean and jerk attempt, in which he just crushed the clean.
Yeah.
That guy is phenomenally strong, and the jerk was, you know, is a makeable,
yeah,
lift. It was for there. Him. So he does that, and it's a different ball game. So that'll be exciting to watch over the next couple of years, and at 2020, assuming they are both representing.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting battle, right? Who will they China send on the men's side?
And, yeah.
And Zhao Jun, I think, at this point is probably the favorite. But, I mean, even the 67 was outrageously strong. I mean, he crushed everyone. You know, it's really just a big question mark. Who will China send?
Yeah, and they went 1-2 in the 67s with Li Jun Chen,
yeah,
332, 9 kilos ahead of fellow Chinese lifter Minhao Huang, and
he looked like his third snatch looked like he had 45 kilos left in it. It was just absurdly strong.
Yeah. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see. Simon Martyr,
the Armenian Martrosian.
Yeah. 195-240 in the 109s.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he dominated that class, and there's kind of someone with a questionable call on a 200 kilo snatch,
yeah,
form.
Yeah.
And then rounding out the notable performances is about the most anticlimactic 474 total you can have.
Yep.
Again, a case of just because you get to see these great lifters and you're probably exposed to it so much more because you watch it on Instagram and on YouTube, you know, rather than it just being at the competitions like it would have been, you know, 20, 30 years ago. Lasha was just, you know, 217, 257, just,
yeah,
a casual day dominating the world championships with a 24 kilo victory.
So ridiculous. So ridiculous. That 217 snatch is just, he will probably, if he continues at this, you know, assuming that all things go according to their plans, he'll end up probably being the best super ever, not necessarily just because of the weights he lifts, but, you know, how many guys have done that many 210 kilo plus snatches in competitions?
Yeah.
Kurlovich is the only one I can think of that snatched over 210 many, many times, you know, because he had such a long career. But if Lasha continues to do this, you know, be the only man doing that many 215 kilo plus snatches in competition.
And yeah, it just looks like he can do as much as he wants.
Yeah, Yeah, it's almost like I expected him to not take these dumb numbers. He's not going to take 225. There's no reason. He's just going to break the record and save it.
And Lasha doesn't just do it for the gram?
Yeah, I don't think so. I heard a story that he contacted one of the U.S. Coaches who has a supplement company asking for some exorbitant amount of money to be sponsored, you know? So he definitely is aware of that. His detox tea is coming out next month, I think.
Yeah. So, and don't take it for granted. Don't be disappointed that he didn't do 221 like you were hoping, because you're getting to see probably the best to ever do it as a super, just methodically dominate the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Amazing. So that brings us to the final topic of today's episode, which is how you qualify for the Olympics.
Yeah.
So this is going to go on for about the next 7 hours. So you know, strap in, kids, and we're gonna break this down for you.
Yeah.
But the real answer to how you qualify for the Olympics is who the fuck knows. And honestly, I don't know that anyone could actually tell you.
Yeah.
And know what it's going to be by the time Olympic qualifying is done, because it seems like there might be a bit of a moving target.
Yeah. In internationally, I believe the standard is you've got to be in the top eight in the world, and you have to have
the most recent world championships.
Now, I'm not entirely clear on that. I believe it's just within the qualifying period have been in the top eight in the world in at one all. Of these meets.
Okay.
Or be a continental champion, meaning that you're the best in the Pan Ams or the Asian Games or the Asian Championships or Europeans, and be that outside of somebody who's already in the top eight. So, for example, if there's already a Colombian girl in the top eight and you win the Pan Ams, right? Even though that girl, or you get second to that girl, you're still the best in the Pan Ams outside of being somebody who's already in the top eight. Does that make sense?
No.
So then...
You guys can't see it right now, but Max looks like Alan in The Hangover, and there's numbers just flying past his face.
And then you have to do six international meets, one of which is gold, one of which is silver, but you don't have to total at all six, just four of them. And your top four scores are counted towards your overall Roby placing. Now, I don't know if it's the average of those top four or the highest of those top four.
Drop the lowest, average the other two. And then when you add in the extra thing of Olympic and non-Olympic classes, that convolutes the issue even more. Then when you look at, you know, a country can only send up to four men and four women. So, you know, someone like China, where every single one of their women finished on the podium, but they only get one spot because of so many doping failures, you're going to have seven Chinese lifters, Chinese females, who are taken out of the rankings, and then everyone moves up a spot. And
I think there's also a golden barbell. If the president of your country lifts a golden barbell, the heaviest golden barbell, that procures you extra spots. And I really feel like Trump could win that department. I think it's just right up his alley.
He'd be the best. He'd be the best. He loves gold.
He loves gold. He
fucking loves gold.
That's absolutely true.
I bet he has a collection of golden barbells around
for sure.
The Trump Tower.
For sure there's a golden barbell. And it's going to be the heaviest.
How many times has he asked, like, you get white? Are you sure we just leave the house white? You going to throw some gold accents on this? But it's a very tricky process. Like looking at Alyssa specifically, in the 49 kilo class, the top four finishers were two from China and two from Thailand. Now, China only gets one spot for each their men and women, and Thailand gets two spots for each their men and women. So Thailand had the champion at 45, a non-Olympic class, the champion at 49, first and fourth at 49, and the champion at 55. So 45 kilo girl, she's out. You know, I mean, yeah. I guess she could go back up to 49, because I think, wasn't she the champion last year at 48?
Yeah.
And then the 55-kilo girl, they'll almost definitely be selecting her. And then probably one of these 49-kilo class athletes. China, unlikely to take a second or third place finisher from 49s as their one Olympic representative.
Yeah.
So there's three spots gone. So, you know, Alyssa on the rankings effectively then moves from 12th to 9th. And whatever sort of retroactive, you know, or doping testing yet to come that could move up another
right.
spot or two, then the Pan Am Games stuff come into play. Roby points, we're trying to work on the conversion rate of Roby points to Schrute Bucks to Stanley Nichols.
Yeah, everything is moving. And then the biggest question mark is, what is the USA's qualification procedure then? Are they going to structure something where we select our best based on the highest Roby, or based on a top eight list, or based on an overall average of the top classes? So we don't even know yet, and I know this because we heard that they're going to change it. We don't even know yet the USA's qualification procedure for who we're picking. So outside of people qualifying under the rules of the IWF, it's now a question mark of how are we qualifying our lifter here?
Yeah. So it's and to further complicate that issue for the U.S., in addition to having to have six international competitions at the bronze or above standard. So that's Worlds, Pan Ams, and then a couple like Grand Prix type of meets. And then there's a couple now like special sessions within the U.S. that are going to reach that level. You also have to then make the international teams.
Yes.
And that's its kind of own convoluted process within the U.S. So the next... All we can really tell you, you know, after we solve the Russian doll, there's a cryptex, Russian doll cryptex going on. There's a big cryptex with a smaller cryptex inside it, with a smaller cryptex inside of that. And finally, then there's a national treasure / holy grail type of quest.
Yeah.
The smallest cryptex contains the instructions for that, many riddles.
Yep.
So all we can really tell you is the next thing that matters for a U.S. lifter in pursuit of making the Olympics, and that is...
qualifying for the Pan Am Championships and going to the Pan Am Championships.
Yes.
That's the next most important
thing. Pan Am Games or Pan Am Championships?
Pan Am Championships, because there are now Pan Am Games the same year, and they're after the Pan... and it's only a silver-level meet.
So March or April Pan Am Championships?
April Pan Am Championships, I believe.
Yeah. So the next several months of important, potentially important things for a U.S. lifter trying to go to the Olympics. American Open Finals count as a Pan Am Championship qualifier. Worlds was a Pan Am Championship qualifier.
Yeah.
Now there was talk of retroactively making the American Open Series 3 a Pan Am Championship.
Apparently
qualifier.
They've done that already.
Yeah, which, by the way, that's complete fucking bullshit,
yeah.
USAW.
Just a dumb idea. I don't understand.
Say, yeah, make the rules, lay them out before the process begins, and then follow them. Yeah. But so you have AO3 coming up in a few weeks, can be involved in Pan Am Championship qualifying. Then AO Series 1 at the Arnold, another Pan Am Championship qualifier. Then Pan Am Championships.
Yeah.
Then Nationals, which could be a Pan Am Games / Worlds qualifier. And then only four people can go to the Pan Am Games instead of a normal team of eight. If someone wins that, now they're into the mix to be eligible for the Olympics. There's Roby points going on all over the place.
Yep.
There's multipliers to Roby points if you're at the World
yes.
Championships.
Yes, that's right. The multipliers.
There's the bronze level IWF special session at Youth Worlds in Vegas in February. There's probably going to be another one of those that comes up along the way. Then there'll be some fucking retroactive changes to all of that.
Yeah. Well, there's also all the international meets, too. You could go, you could fly to Qatar.
Yeah, you fly to Qatar. You could fly, there was one in, what, Ecuador.
Ecuador. Then there's Thailand, January. Like, there's just so many of these things. The real concern, I think, overall is that people that are not going, that are not going to be eligible, but are still good enough to surpass the people. Yeah, it's, you're setting yourself up for a situation where somebody maybe doesn't want to have to compete at the top level to make a team spot, but someone else who wasn't on the team prior takes that spot from them, and you end up in a situation where people basically don't have a chance to attend these meets because someone else bumped them off the list, or a couple people did. Anyone who didn't go to Worlds has had a chance to train quite a bit more through Worlds, could potentially knock one of these people off, you know, any man or woman on the team.
Yeah, and I think as it stands today, well, because of the six meet rule, I guess no one would be on the team. But if we were to overlook that situation, that you have to do six of these, you know, bronze or higher meets with one gold and one silver type of shit in the 18-month qualifying period. And when I say do the meet, you could Ilya it and just show up and weigh in. But as it stands today, the U.S. Olympic team would be Harrison Morris, our lone men's representative, because he was the only male to finish in the top eight. And Sarah Robles, I want to say, would be our lone female representative. Because though Jenny Arthur and Maddie Rogers both also finished in the top eight, they did so in non-Olympic classes.
Yeah.
Which, again, Robie points matter in a non-Olympic class, but the rankings don't. It's really fucking confusing.
It's very odd. It's a very odd scenario here. No one knows exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
And we're all waiting to find out what the actual process
is. And when we say no one knows, I don't think there is one person, including Phil Andrews and Ursula, who could actually tell you how the Olympic qualifying will, in fact, work.
Yeah, yeah.
So a moving target all around for the administrators, for the coaches, for the athletes. They don't understand, which is really fucking stupid, because it's already changed, like, three times inside this quad.
Yeah.
And it's going to probably change another time as well. That's how you qualify for the Olympics of weightlifting. Enjoy explaining that to anyone who cares. So that's it. Our recap, Jug Life recap of the 2018 IWF Worlds. Max, congrats to you, Coach. Congrats to Team Juggernauts, Alyssa Ritchie, all the U.S. lifters. Very, very fine performances. Where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram, max_Ada, or Facebook, or you can email me, max@jtsstrength.com.
And if you're interested in online coaching, juggernautcoaching.com is the place for that. Check out our new AI coaching system for powerlifting. It's basically like holding my brain in your hand. and it telepathically tells you what weights to lift. But it's a really, really cool system. We got a bunch of videos on YouTube and stuff where you can get more information about that from myself and co-creator Garrett Blessings Blevins. So go check those out. Trying to change the game, as the kids say, with the online coaching on that. So go check that out. At Juggernaut Training, at Chad Wesley Smith on Instagram and Facebook. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, write us something funny or nice. We always appreciate that. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.